This is special coverage on the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. I'm News Director Sarah Bohannon. May is Mental Health Month in the United States, so today we'll be focusing on just that with Dr. Joyce Michael Flynn, an author, researcher, and professor who will be discussing how to better take care of your mental health during this pandemic and the fact that even though it might not feel like it now, crises like this one we're facing can actually change your life for the better. As always, if you have questions or comments for us, give us a call on our message line 433-9216 or visit our website, mynspr.org. For Friday, May 8th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. This pandemic has caused anxiety and significant changes to our lives. And even though in California, we're at a point where there's a slight amount of light at the end of the tunnel, the amount of loss and uncertainty is still vast, and it can feel overwhelming. This is why I recently reached out to Dr. Joyce Michael Flynn to find a little hope in what sometimes can seem like a not-so-hopeful world, especially during this time. She's a professor at Sacramento State School of Nursing who researches survivorship, resilience, and post-traumatic growth. She's interviewed hundreds of people about various crises they've been through, and more importantly, not just how they survived despite their lived trauma, but how they thrived and moved forward because of it. She's chronicled some of these stories in a book called Turning Tragedy into Triumph and on a podcast called Sliver of Hope. And it's research that actually started because of her own traumatic experience. 30 years ago, while at a swim meet, Dr. Michael Flynn went under the water and she didn't come back up. She ended up having to be pulled out of the pool, and she says it took 22 minutes for emergency responders to get her heart going again. She ended up in a hospital on a respirator. She says when she woke up a few weeks later, the life she knew was completely changed.
One of the things that got me into the work that I'm doing now is when I was initially coming back and I would ask doctors, a couple of doctors in particular, well, when will I run again? And they, oh, you'll never run again. You'll walk, but you won't run. Well, when will I swim? You're never going to do that. You'll never swim again. And I remember looking at this physician and I just looked at him. I said, you know, I'm living what I can't do. I'm really aware of my limitations right now. So I need you to tell me what I can do. And you need to ask me what I want to do. And your job is to get me there. And it really opened me up to, as I was going through all of this, how we take such a negative view of trauma. And I get it. Things are bad. Things are scary. You're in fear. But after a while, too, I did start realizing that although some things were taken away, I was given some insight and some appreciation to life that had I not gone through this, I wouldn't have valued that. I wouldn't have seen that. And so I had a bachelor's in nursing and I already was a nurse practitioner. So it prompted me over time to go back to school to study this. And so I got my master's in nursing, studying people who had survived death events. And I was curious if they had gone through the same situations and same problems I'd gone through. And then after a time, I was just fascinated by the notion of people not only surviving huge traumas, but thriving. And not in spite of the trauma, but as a direct result. And so that prompted me to go do doctoral work. And my doctoral work was specifically studying people who had gone through extreme events and had done well. And I looked at not only why, but more importantly, how they achieved that. And that is what directed me to the system that I created called Metahabilitation. And metahabilitation outlines a specific pathway. It gives you stages to move through to accomplish that.
It's just so interesting to me with this pandemic, how I think there is very much a feeling of a loss of control. And it is a crisis. And I kind of wanted to ask you that too. You've talked to so many people who have had various traumas. What is a trauma? What is a crisis?
You know, that's a great question. And there are specific definitions around that. But in general, I think people, it is an adjustment. It is a change. It is a, you know, if you look at from pathology, it is an injury. It's an insult to a person spiritually, intellectually, physically, or both. It attacks your system. So trauma and crisis have to do with attacking systems and overwhelming the system at some point. And most of the time, systems can adapt and adjust and over time grow as a result of this. But initially, they have to deal with the attack.
So your research, you know, it focuses on the fact that these crises, trauma, they're not only survivable, but you can actually come out much better and stronger because of the crisis or trauma. Can you tell me more about your research and what you've learned? You know, what are those steps to get to that point?
There are six stages that I've identified. And the first stage that we can probably all identify with is the acute phase. And that's the shock part. That's the acute trauma or the challenge that happens. And you're like, what? What is this? You know, the world, the universe, somebody has upended you. Things have happened. And it's a very tough time where people are phased, like, what do I do? What do I do with this? What am I supposed to do? Where do I go? It's the intense, you're in ICU. That's the time that you really only think about what's going to keep you alive. That's the acute phase. What do you need to do to keep yourself going? Then stage two, and this is a critical stage. Somebody asked me this the other day. What are there critical stages? And I would say stage two is a critical stage because I've identified that as the turning point or the choice. And when you talk to anybody who has moved forward, whether that's been a seamless move forward or they've had challenges as they move forward, they will still tell you they can remember when they made the choice to move forward. They may say, as I did, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I don't know what's going to happen, but I am choosing to move forward and take on whatever I have to take on to do that. That's critical. At stage three, once they make the choice to move forward, then they get into all sorts of treatment modalities. And they can be complementary and traditional treatments, but that's when you get into everything from physical activity to physicians to speech therapy. Whatever is your issue, you really spend a lot of time working with therapies and getting you to move forward to get better. Stage four, I call adaptation and adjustment. And we see a lot of that right now with the COVID thing. We've had to adapt and we've had to adjust. Now, what's really critical and how you can think about that in the context of where we are now is that adaptation and adjustment is temporary. We don't always just need to be there, but we do need to have some adaptation and adjustments just to keep us going for a while. So we're not always going to be shelter in place. That adaptation isn't always going to be there, but for now we have to do that. But also what that give that adaptation and adjustment is a time where people kind of take a deep breath because they've been very busy looking at all the treatments and what they can accomplish. And as they adapt and adjust for now, they get the time to start to think about, what does this mean? What am I learning? What am I supposed to be learning? What do I see now I didn't see before? And then stage five, and this is the thing that I think I'm going to be working with people a lot on. Stage five is re-entry into life. So people are going to get over this viral shelter in place. And I think one of the biggest challenges for us is re-entry. How are you going to move back into life? How are you going to start to, you know, get back into your jobs, your socialization, everything? Because you do need to get back into that. You need to move forward. And then the sixth stage, and this does happen, this takes a while for people to encourage, is what I call taking on the future or metahab. And that's when you have adopted, you have recognized your strengths, your ability to adapt and adjust, taking help, understanding things, that you get things at a level now that you actually say, I didn't want that to happen. And I really don't want to go through that again. But in a weird way, I see things now I didn't see before. I recognize how strong I am and what I need to do. And you've a growth mindset. You have a growth mindset. And once you see things that way, it ratchets up immediately when you hit your next challenge, because that mindset is like, woo, it threw me, you know, I fell off that bike and it's going to be a problem, but I know how to get back on that bike and start riding it again a lot faster than I did before this all happened. So it is really the mindset, the growth mindset, the approach to the challenge and the problems that now comes from a resilient, strength-based growth frame of mind. And I have identified not only stages of MetaHab, but also characteristics and facilitating conditions of the MetaHab survivor. So I love to give people that list of characteristics and facilitating conditions and say, here's a list of stuff people have done who have done well. Check off what you have. And it's so funny. People go, well, you want me to check off what I don't have? I go, no, I can't do anything with that. I want you to check off what you have. And it is so great to see people's faces, because you start going, well, I can do this. Well, I got that. And I said, see, that's where you start. You start with what you have. You use what you already have. And it's so powerful to help people point out their inner strengths and really resilient characteristics that they might not even have noted until somebody said, well, what'd you do before? You've gone through bad stuff before. What'd you do? Here's a list. We'll check some stuff off. And it's so powerful to see that with them.
What kinds of characteristics would be on that list?
Really important, optimistic, positive thinking. Now, that's not Pollyannish-like. There is a reality. If you can think negative, you can also think positive. So I want you to start thinking about the positive things. I want you to think about one of the biggest things that can help is people who, as I said, asked for and accepted help did much better. People who surrounded themselves with people who did stuff, who were doers, who were positive, not negative, fearful kind of people. You can't do that. It's so easy to get into the negative. You got to surround yourself with positive people. You also, family support. Now, I know this is tough because we have all this shelter in place, but any ways you can get your family to help support each other and move through that. You have also have people who have had strong relationships with people. So you need to lean on each other. You have to go to those relationships. You have to push that together. For that, people who set goals, that is key. You start setting goals. People who adapted, they go, you know, I'm so angry at this. That's cool. Get angry, but figure out what it is that you can control and what you can do. But that acceptance, having gratitude for what you have, that is so key. That, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's taken away, but recognizing what has been given and exercising some gratitude about that. Probably one of the biggest things that I've seen with people who do well is this notion of purpose. And that's when I talk about goal setting or what you can do. Is there in your day, you don't have to have the purpose of, I'm going to go work to get a cure and find a vaccine for COVID-19. There's a lot of purposes in the day that you can do that will help you move forward. It's sort of like when you get down and out, get busy getting busy. Call somebody, write some notes, send some mail, find a way to be of service, find a way to do something for somebody else that will absolutely take you out of your funk and you recognize what you can do. So those are just some of the things that I have on the list that I've seen people do and that help them forward in moving in the stages through the stages of MetaHab.
Yeah, I love that idea of purpose. And there are so many things that you can do and people are doing right now during this pandemic just to help other people, whether it's calling someone, like you said, or maybe shopping for someone. Those are things that would fall into that category of serving and having a purpose.
You know, one of the things that I've been doing too is I write little notes and I mail cards to my grandchildren because I can't be around them right now for this. And it's so fun when I get their calls, like, oh, I got, you know, your mail today, or I did that, you know, and just seeing, you know, this kind of, who sends mail anymore? You know, my grandchildren don't even, you know, everybody texts us or emails or whatever. Who sends mails where you actually can get, and it's fun. And it's fun for me. It takes me out of my funk, and it's fun for me to do that. And again, I look at the future because there is a future to this. There is going to be an end to this. And I start planning for that future. I start planning when things open up, how do I want to go back? And the other thing that's very critical about this is to realize that people who have gone through really significant things, you know, one of the first things they thought, well, you know, I want my life back. I want my life back. And I don't say this to them right away, but as they work through the stages, they get it and they understand it. You really don't want that life back because you have set yourself up to have a better life with more insight, with more appreciation, with that you shouldn't have the exact life that you left. It should be a better life. I remember interviewing Dominic, who I interviewed for my dissertation. He was 21 years old. He was a rugby player at Berkeley, and he had suffered a car accident and had been paralyzed. And one of the things that he talked about was looking at, you know, your life afterwards and wanting your life back and realizing the life you had probably isn't going to be the life that you're looking forward to. But the focus was on building that new life. How do you build your new life? Specifically using the lessons you learned from the trauma experience. So when people come back, and he said, you know, Dominic will talk about, you don't want to lose those lessons. And that's the thing that I'm afraid too, that some people are going to go through this. And we've learned lessons. We've learned some really cool lessons about ourselves and each other. And you don't want to just run right back into life and forget those lessons. Those are valuable lessons to take forward when you re-enter life.
You're listening to special coverage on the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. Today, we're exploring the idea of post-traumatic growth with Dr. Joyce Michael Flynn. Stay tuned. This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Before the break, I was talking to Dr. Joyce Michael Flynn. She's a professor at Sacramento State School of Nursing who researches survivorship, resilience, and post-traumatic growth. Even though it might not feel like it now, we humans have the ability to learn from and grow greatly from crises such as this pandemic. We just finished talking about how past traumas can teach valuable lessons that, if not forgotten, can help to get to a more hopeful future. Now back to our conversation.
I wanted to touch on that a little bit more because you had brought that up about looking to past traumas and crises that you have been through and got through as a source of strength.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of work that other people have done. Serge Campeau is a PhD, is a neuroscientist. I believe he's at University of Colorado, who did some work on stress resilience. There's Tedecki and Calhoun who have done work on the five domains of post-traumatic growth. So there's some other people that brought that forward. And here's the notion. We have unbelievable capacities not only to survive, but actually to adapt, adjust, and over time grow. They talk about stress resilience. Things just don't happen to your system without them being engaged. So for example, as I'm sure people listening to this, if you fractured a bone or you've had a laceration or a skin injury or whatever, when you see the healing process of that fractured bone, or you've had sutures, or you had a cut or whatever, and you see the process of that, at first it hurts more. At first it looks worse. But over time, as you let your body work on it, all of a sudden you start to see how that healing happens. And over time, when you'll be able to see, oh, I have a scar, but that scar actually is stronger than the surrounding skin. If you fractured your bone at one site, the healing process is such that that bone is probably going to be stronger at the site of the injury than the surrounding bone. So if our body does that without us even being consciously aware of it, we will see we've had trauma. But in moving through that traumatic experience and healing, the healing process actually provides those areas to be stronger than they were prior to the trauma. Our emotional system can do the same thing. You talk about a toughness. Well, toughness doesn't just happen. People were pushed up against. They had to respond. They had to get a good response. And once you do that and you recognize, hey, this pushed me. And I realized some things in myself I hadn't seen before. Because the other thing too that is really interesting, and people see this, I see this all the time, we underestimate our capacity. A lot of times I go, oh, I don't know, like even with this thing, I don't know if I can go through another month of this. I don't think I can do another month. I don't think. And yet you will. You will go through another month. You will move past this. You will do that and go, wow, I guess I was stronger than I thought I was. And that's the beauty that can come out of this, that people see, I saw some strength in me I hadn't seen before. I hadn't recognized, I didn't realize was there until I went through this and got through it.
It seems like a lot of this is that focus on what I can do. And I was wondering if you had any advice for people right now in how to get to that place to focus on what they can do and what they can be doing right now during this pandemic.
I teach at Sac State, and so we've had to go all online. And I do teach a class in trauma called Traumatology, an Introduction to Post-Traumatic Growth. And we were doing our Zoom session yesterday, actually, and this was the absolute theme of the lecture that I was doing yesterday. And I think the first and foremost mindset has to be the notion of choice. You have to make the choice. I don't want to do this. I hate this, but I'm going to choose. So what are you going to choose? Well, you got to choose action. You just do. So again, get busy getting busy. Focus on, is there some work that I can be doing that I actually will enjoy doing now? Is there somebody that I can call? Sit down for a few minutes and think about what can I do? Make a list of that. Every morning, maybe make 2 or 3 goals that you want to accomplish during that day. It could be anything. It could be putting flowers in your house. I don't care. It's just something. It's action, something that you're doing. The other thing too is it's really important to keep the host well and alive. And by the host, I mean you, your body, your strength. Because when you get back into the world, you want to go in a healthy way. So make sure you keep yourself healthy and alive. How are you sleeping? How are you eating? What are you eating? Having a discipline around that. Getting out of doors every single day. You must get out of doors every single day. Now, there's strategies around how to do that, but you do need to do that. The other thing too, one of the things that is most problematic when I see people going through traumatic situations is the notion of isolation. Now, that sounds kind of crazy that I would even bring that up because we go, well, that's what we're doing. But isolation can happen in many ways. So to reduce your risk of isolation, again, call somebody, Zoom somebody, do something that you initiate some interaction with a human being on a daily basis. That is absolutely key. Don't allow yourself to isolate around this. And again, I started this talking about being positive and not surrounding yourself with negative, scary stuff. And I really mean this when I say this. You've got to limit your access to the media. And I don't think the media is this horrible, but it just limit your access to it. Pick a media source that you trust. Spend maybe 20 to 30 minutes, no more than an hour a day looking at this. So I do think you need to limit your access to the news, what's out there and what you're looking at. And it doesn't mean that you're not going to be informed, but you are controlling your information around that. Again, start making some goals and objectives for reentry. Spend some time doing that. How is that going to look? What do you want to do? What changes do you want to make? Spend some time strategizing, getting back into life and the reentry part to that. And one other thing that I think I'd really like people to remember, there are other things to talk about and focus on than this. So I was just having a really good conversation with my son who lives in New York. And we talked about this a little bit because obviously New York's such a hot spot for all the problems and the tragedy that's going on there. But we decided, well, let's talk about some other things too. So we talked about some movies we were watching or some books we were reading or some, you know, cute things that we saw on Instagram or whatever. So spend some time talking to other people about things other than this, and that will lighten your spirit as well.
That was Dr. Joyce Michael Flynn. She's a professor at Sacramento State School of Nursing who researches survivorship, resilience, and post-traumatic growth. Her book is called Turning Tragedy into Triumph. She also hosts the podcast Sliver of Hope. You can find out more information about both at metahab.com. And that is your program. If you have any thoughts for us, leave them on our message line 433-9216 or go to our website, mynspr.org. Today's special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Christian Solis, Andre Bayek, and Phil Wilkie. Our technical producer is Matt Fidler. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, news director at North State Public Radio, and this is Special Coverage. Until next time, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you are stronger than you think.